I just had this memory as I came in to the shrine room about how I'd once introduced the Karuna Bhavna in this shrine room. And that morning I'd been assisting Ratnashuri with a few things and just thinking how important it was that each of us helped each other. And she was already very elderly at that point, and she needed a lot of practical help and just companionship. And I was doing this, and then I stepped out of the kitchen, and one of the big black cats had caught an animal, and it had killed the animal, and it was calling and calling, and it was calling its mother, who was another very old lady in the garage, lying asleep, and who was mostly deaf, and he was calling her to say, "I've bought you something." And sometimes she heard and sometimes she didn't. And after about 10 minutes, he would give up and eat the animal. But it was a very lovely sort of mirroring of different animals caring for each other sort of thing, actually. And I just felt how important that was, that we lived in a world where beings functioned like that, I suppose. And this morning I've been thinking a bit about that line in the Karaniya Metta Sutta about the mother shielding from hurt her child. And just thinking how it describes a kind of instinct of wanting to protect. That, you know, for some mothers is absolutely instinctual. You know, if you see your child in pain, you just want to do something about it. There isn't anything rational about it at all. It's happening on a very deep level. And occasionally we can touch in on that, whether the other person is our child or not. A few years ago, I was listening to a report on the radio about about the death of a young man who was a student reporter. And I think he'd travelled to one of the war zones. I can't remember whether he was going there to do some sort of practice reporting or whether he was going there as one of those volunteer human shields. I can't remember the details, actually. And he died by in crossfire, because he saw a child in the middle of the road and he just ran to get it, picked it up and then was shot. Okay, the child wasn't shot. And the report was based around his diaries and why he was doing any of that, and also the voice of his mother talking about her experience of his, what he'd done, yeah. But there he'd got an instinct, hadn't he? And sometimes in the big moments, we have a good instinct and we act. It's in the small day-to-day humdrum bits of life where we just can't be bothered. We just don't love them enough and the instinct isn't very sort of there. Yeah, there's this lovely there's this lovely description in one of Sangharakshita's seminars. I think he's talking about the quality of patience. And he says, I think it's in one of the Dhammapada seminars. He says something like, we can have patience when a lion jumps out in front of us. It's the mosquitoes that get us. And it is a bit like that, isn't it? We can rise to the challenge of something big, but it's the small, irritating aspects of life where we're just asked to respond a little bit more, a little bit differently, and we just don't love them enough to do it, basically. So we have an instinct sometimes to help or to protect, and we sometimes have an instinct just simply of self-protection, and that's what cuts through. In Vajragupta's book, Tools for Living Your Life, he describes very beautifully and movingly and honestly a moment of self-protection. And it's when he's accompanying a friend to a hospital appointment, and his friend is going to have an injection into his spine. I suppose, to relieve some sort of backache. And they've been told that the procedure will be painful. So you know, if a hospital tells you the procedure will be painful, it's going to be really painful. And Vajragupta was very, very happy to accompany his friend. And I can't remember if he was describing this in the book or whether he described it to me, but basically his friend was very self-contained, generally. But when the injection happened, the friend had an instinct to reach out for Vajragupta's hand. And in that moment, Vajragupta flinched and drew his hand back. That moment of self-protection, which he immediately regretted. It's a very good description, isn't it, of that sort of flinch, that moving away, that resistance to whatever's needing to happen there. I was also thinking of another report I heard on the radio, or an article I heard on the radio a few years ago, which was of a group of children who, all quite young, probably from the age of about 8 to about the age of 14, talking about the loss of a sibling through death. And they were being interviewed by a reporter who's about 35 years old himself, who'd lost a child when the child was about 8. And they were just exchanging experiences, adult to children, children to adult sort of thing. And I won't go into the details of it, it was very, very moving. In a kind of, not in a horrible way, in a sort of very meaningful way, just the way the children questioned, for instance, the man's response to his child's death, for instance. And they also had a very articulate young girl who was about 14, who'd written a book about her experience of losing a brother, I think it was. And she talked about what it was like to see people crossing the road in order to avoid her, because nobody wanted to talk to her about it. And they all then exchanged their own stories where adults and children alike had avoided contact with them because they didn't feel adequate, they didn't feel up to it, or they just didn't want to have that experience of being in contact with that suffering in that child. And just how painful that was for them, because the children in their own way was just wanted to just express and talk. So I just think this is a very lovely, well, in a way it's a very lovely and very common example of us avoiding and resisting experience. For a few years at Taraloka, we hosted a local charity called Hope House. And we just did this one afternoon a year. And Hope House was a charity that counselled and supported families that had lost a child through death. And they would arrive, and the counsellors or support workers or whoever they were would lay out a big tea and sandwiches and cake and whatever, refreshments. And then they would do a ritual, and we were always invited to engage with that ritual with them. And that's particularly why they wanted it to happen here. They wanted it within a ritual space, a space that would be appropriate for what they were going to be doing. And it usually consisted of something like them gathering around one of our ponds and writing a lot of messages and tying the messages onto balloons and releasing them into the sky. And this ritual sort of, well, it's a ritual, isn't it? It carries something. So, of course, you never really knew what they would be writing. And obviously, I mean, it was very moving seeing like children of 4 or 5 engaging with that ritual, as well as the parents engaging with it. And I expect a 4-year-old's writing a different message, maybe to the brother or sister that they've lost. And maybe the parents are writing a different message altogether. But I've just thought how important it was that that ritual, well, it relates to the individual, it's the individual's message, but it also puts something into the universe. And how I think in some ways we do need to put something into the universe to help us work with the suffering that we witness. It's also a ritual of letting go. You know, when the balloons go up, something is released. There is a letting go there. So something's going to the universe and there's something being let go of. In a way, we're all trying to make meaning out of our experience. And trying to resolve the emotions and feelings that we have around our experience. And I think one way, certainly for me, one way that I give my experience meaning is by allowing it to motivate me to make a difference, put something into the universe. A couple of weeks ago, I was noticing that when I was walking around Torreloka and coming back down the track, I was picking up all these very loose black plastic that had blown off one of the hay bales. And there's a reason why I was doing this. I was doing it very thoroughly and untangling it from all the barbed wire. It was because a couple of years ago, I once saw a cow eating the black plastic. And it's not, it's not a good sight. And you know that isn't going to be a good thing for that cow. It's eating the black plastic, and it's just not a little piece, it's quite a long piece. And once the cow started, it has to sort of go on till the end kind of thing. And there was absolutely nothing that I could do about it. So I couldn't do something about it for that cow there, if you see what I mean. But I can do something about removing the black plastic that I find now in my environment. So I can bring a certain quality of meaning and effect from that original experience. So tonglens, in a way, it's just an internal ritualized process of us being willing to engage with a particular experience, which we don't always want to engage with, that we will often block, turn away from, ignore, get angry about, you know, however it manifests, however that resistance manifests. And and being willing to bear witness to that, being willing to engage with that, and then it's us putting something into the universe, putting something into that, putting something into the universe that could make a difference in relationship to that very thing that we're experiencing. So we're working with that instinctive self-protection that shows up in various ways in us, in different ways. And we're just using the breath to help that ritualized process. So we're breathing in when we'd usually block, and we're breathing out what we'd usually hold on just for ourselves. So the goodness, the resources, the kindness that in some ways we don't want to entirely spend, we want to keep just for ourselves. And we're just sharing that. I've got this image of a mother saying to a child, sharing. You know how you learn that at a young age, don't you? This is sharing now. Share that with your sister. Sharing, like that. So we're all learning that. How do we share? How do we share our goodness? How do we share our light? When do we want to hold on to it? When do we want to preserve it for a rainy day, maybe? For a better use. So we're breathing in when we're in contact with something which we usually want to ignore or block, and we're breathing out the resources that we can share with the world. So we're going to do a meditation this morning where we're going to just start with a preliminary setup. So just give ourselves a chance to arrive and build up the practice from a basis of self-metta, open awareness, maybe be in contact with the Buddha or Bodhisattva to resource us. Could use touching on the heart wish. You know, what's that kind of purity of motivation that's really going to support us? Then we'll do a bit of Tonglen for ourselves, just turning towards our experience as it is right now. And just working with any closing down or resistance that we have, or reluctance we have to having that experience, if that is what's showing up. And then we'll call to mind someone who is suffering and just allow ourselves to be in relationship to that person. Just bring ourselves into relationship with their experience. See if we can just kind of bring a kind of quality of empathy, sympathy to that experience. Could use your breath, using your in-breath to stay in connection with their suffering, with their experience. And then using the out-breath to send them whatever you think will help, just sending that out into the universe to help. And then after that, we'll turn towards other people that are suffering, could be suffering in the same way. Maybe there's a particular kind of quality of suffering or a particular condition in their lives that's creating the suffering. There's going to be many other people suffering like that. So we can just open out to people suffering in the same way. And you can just allow the meditation to expand, to hold more people in that way. Or you could follow the stages of the metta bhavana and just turn towards a friend, a person you don't know very well, a person you find difficult. You could just turn towards those. Or you can follow just a very associative thinking process. And we'll just follow where your natural line of interest goes. You know, you've got your own particular suffering, and that's maybe in connection with one other person, and they come to mind. So then just do Tonglen for them. And then you realize, oh, they are suffering and they do something with me, and that's what they're doing over there. And just follow that thread and allow Tonglen to happen for that person over there. And just in that way, just build up the meditation. And it might contain several people, or it might contain only one or two. And just working all the time with resistance, that's what you're trying to do. Work with that flinch, that self-protection flinch, that sort of turning away, that, you know, that thing that makes you want to walk on the other side of the road so you don't have to meet whatever it is. And if you get a big reaction to something, that to the meditation or to a person or, I don't know, to anything, just then allow that experience to become what you're working with. That's going to become your working ground. Just turn towards that experience. The flinch. If you have a sunblock or resistance to something, then just allow that to become what you're working with. Yeah, breathe that in and then send out whatever you need, ease or whatever. Yeah. And all of this is taking place within the view that we're trying to exchange that instinct for self-protection for an instinct of other regarding, the bodhicitta. So that's what we're trying to do. Change that direction ourselves. And if you really believe that, then this practice becomes like the kindest thing you could do for yourself, changing that direction in yourself.